What is anime? Anime is action, sci-fi, comedy, martial arts. Anime is straight from Japan.
But is it? Everybody, welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Birchie. Lindsay Leverage is here.
Hey, guys.
And for this special show, we are joined by a very special guest. You know him from Anna Gamers. You know his work on Crunchyroll. You know his work on a site called Anime News Network. And you probably even know him from anime conventions where he runs a ton of panels. He's like best friends with Studio Trigger, I think.
I don't know. Look, people say that. I would not say that. I would not say best friends, but friends. Let's say friends.
And also the burger thing. It's Evan Minto. Yes, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I am wearing the hamburger shirt, actually. So, living up to my brand, whether I like it or not.
You're painting a word picture for the people listening. So today we've got a big discussion coming up, but we always want to get through our first couple segments here. So first, Lindsay, have you seen anything lately that compelled you?
I finally watched the first episode of The Witcher with Henry Cavill.
Ah, yes.
Yeah. I mostly watched it for Henry Cavill.
Sure.
His mouth doesn't, but I'm kind of fixated on his mouth right now. Okay. I don't know if anyone else noticed this while watching the show.
I feel like there's other things that people fixate on.
Well, sure, Henry but Cavill. It doesn't move, right? I'm kind of I'm debating whether like they CG'd his mouth because it really gives me that impression the whole time. I couldn't enjoy the rest of Henry Cavill because I kept staring at his weird mouth.
I'm pretty sure they didn't, but he also rarely speaks in the show. Like, he doesn't, it's The Witcher, so he doesn't say that much.
That's true, but, like, he emotes a few times, like, gets exasperated or whatever, but his lips just stay in the same, like, they don't stretch or move correctly. It's really weird.
That thing with the mustache, didn't they have to,
like, Justice League. Yeah. In Justice League, I watched, like, one episode of The Witcher and kind of bounced off it because I thought it was kind of like, eh, all right. But there is that shot, that famous shot in Justice League where he was filming The Man from U.N.C.L.E. at the time and they were doing reshoots and he's like, I can't shave this mustache off because I need it for The Man from U.N.C.L.E. So they just CG'd his lip really quickly, apparently.
Oh, yeah.
It's extremely distracting.
Does he like stray weird hairs up there like the whole time or something?
No, it's just you can tell the top of his lip is warped. Like it's warping around.
All right, so here's my sort of headcanon about Henry Cavill is that after that, he was like, guys, that was great. I would like to have a mustache all the time and then have you CG my mouth for all of my future roles. So that's what's going on in The Witcher.
I believe it.
That's why it costs like $25 million an episode.
Because they've got to remove his
It's in his rider or whatever.
Did you enjoy the show?
No, I thought the plot of the first episode was really trite. So
yeah, well, it's an
probably
old
won't
book.
Be coming back to it.
Yeah, I don't know. I wasn't even interested enough to leave it on in the background. Like, there's a lot of memes coming out of it and everything, which is good for Netflix. And they were very quick to name it like the most successful show of last year. But a lot of people are like, I don't know about that.
Was it though?
Was it? It's only been out. It came out like, what, Christmas Day or something like that?
Something like that.
And within a week, we're declaring it the most successful. Okay, anyway. I did want to briefly mention, I finally caught up with Terminator Dark Fate, which came out a couple months ago. Like, not that long ago, and it's already out on digital.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it didn't do it. It bombed. It bombed. Like, I think the stated production cost was like $225 million, and it made like $223 million worldwide.
Oh.
So it tanked. But I actually blame that on the fact that there's only two good Terminator movies, and the last three of them have been so bad that it's not worth watching any more of them, which is why I didn't see this in theaters. I was like, fuck that.
The last one I saw was Genesis.
Which was terrible.
Yeah, with Christian Bale. Were there any after
You're thinking of Terminator Salvation with Christian Bale. Terminator Genesis had Emilia Clarke in it, and it was also really fucking bad.
Okay, I combined them into one movie in my head. I saw the Christian Bale one, but this, I didn't see Genesis then.
This is so Terminator Dark Fate is intended to be a direct. It has James Cameron's involvement. Which is the first one since Terminator 2.
Does that mean like he looked at it?
Yeah, well, no, right.
I love it when they're like, oh, he's involved. He was in the room once.
I mean, so that's what I thought too. Mm-hmm. But this is intended, this actually just ignores the last three crappy Terminator movies and is a direct sequel to Terminator 2.
Okay.
And it fucking rules. It's really good.
I did hear some good things about it from other people too.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to see it for Linda Hamilton.
And she's great in it. It's really good. The actions, the plot's really good. It actually directly, it has really good politics too. Like it's a direct, it's just like fuck you ICE, like pretty much the whole time.
I feel like a lot of things are like that right now. It's good.
There's a lot of like.
Is it like based on the trailers and what you just said, it kind of makes me think of like Logan because it seems like it's kind of like a. The setting seems like it's sort of in like a desert and
the setting's kind of all over the place, but they do spend a lot of time in and around the border, trying to cross from South America to North America. And they don't take it easy on this. Like it's really direct. I was like, holy shit. And the fights are awesome. There's like really good action. And typically when James Cameron is involved in something as a producer, he actually isn't really super hands off. Like he didn't technically direct Alita, but that's true. That is a James Cameron film. Like you can tell, because the action's really good. And in this one, the fight scenes are all shot really well. It doesn't have that goopy Marvel rushed thing going on where you can barely tell what's happening and you don't care. Like it's really, really hard action, like really good shit. Great ending, good characters, very memorable, a little gay. It's quite good. Basically, like, the story's pretty quick. It's like there's a new John Connor and it's a Latina lady, which is really cool. So like I liked it a lot. It's really good. It's out on digital now. You'll probably be able to rent it for nothing in like a Redbox or something like that, or a few bucks on Amazon. If you were like, I'm bored of Terminator. I thought I was too, and then I saw this and I was like, oh shit. Wow, they really pulled it off. It's too bad no one cared because no one cares about Terminator at all anymore. So, yeah. Anyway, good movie. Check it out. Anyway, that does it for that. Evan, you said you hadn't really seen much lately.
I have not been watching many movies. I have been doing the closest thing to watching a movie, though, which is playing Death Stranding.
Oh.
Okay.
How do you feel about that?
I'm not super into it, but I'm trying to push through it. I've complained about it on Twitter a couple times, basically trying to bait people into explaining to me what I'm doing wrong and why they like it. And I think ABCB Tom on Twitter explained it well, where he was like, it's a very him answer. He was like, it's Zen meditation. You have to not care about finishing the game and just accept that you're going to be spending hours just wandering around, which I'm trying to do now.
Sure.
I was mostly looking forward to getting like the, you know, seeing all the celebrity cameos and all that kind of, you know, Hideo Kojima trying to make a movie.
Yeah.
But there's actually not as much of that as I expected. Like a lot of the game is just trudging around delivering things.
Huh. I've seen some takes on it that were less than great about the politics in it or something.
Oh yeah, the politics. I mean, it's for one thing, it's a movie about like, saving America, which is not super maybe aligned with my politics. It's very like kind of has a patriotism to it that is not really my thing. Interestingly, you know, an American patriotism coming from a Japanese creator, right?
Well, you could see some of that in the Metal Gear Solid games too,
I don't know. You ever watched the end of Metal Gear Solid 2?
In America. Like he's very, very interested in American culture and America in general, right?
Well, yeah. is it about the country, the idea of the country itself, or is it about Because I was told to understand that the game is mostly about connecting people.
It is. But it's just that there's a lot of I think kind of maybe pulled from his kind of Hollywood influences and things. When they're talking about connecting people, they the characters are constantly saying stuff like, we need to reconnect America. We need to rebuild America. Like, America is the stand-in for humanity. Yeah, that part's kind of strange. But I think, like, I haven't found its politics to be super terrible in other ways. I mean, it's about, like, a future in which people are very disconnected from each other. And
oh, well, that's unrecognizable.
Yeah.
Can't imagine that.
Trying to comment on the current day. It does have that really bad acephobic memo at one point in it, which I did get to recently. But that's, like, not really in the text of the main game. That's, like, a side note you can read.
I thought I heard that it had definitely an opinion on, like, reproduction as far as, like, make babies.
Shinzo Abe presents.
Right. I haven't actually super run into that, but I'm not surprised. I mean, there's obviously some of that, I think, in the subtext right now, but Kojima, not one for subtext. So I imagine if he has something to say about babies, he's going to say it at the end of the game.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I can't imagine he won't have anything to say about babies given the game's chief, the central idea around the game.
Deliver this baby?
Yeah. Well, you're not delivering the baby. The baby is helping you spot the ghosts, the BTs. The baby's like your companion.
Mm.
The Mandalorian, 2019.
Yeah. Anyway, I find that the delivery mechanic is decent. The stealth and, like, combat I have not found to be super fun. I know a lot of people like it, but it mostly just gets in the way of the delivery stuff. And the story is not funny, which is honestly what I'm looking for in a Kojima game. Like, Metal Gear games are serious and funny at the same time. Death Stranding is just serious. Mm-hmm. It's not really funny enough.
Yeah, I don't know. I waffled. I have so many other games to play. Like, I haven't even gotten through Link's Awakening. So it's like...
Oh, I haven't even started that.
Yeah.
Well, I did finish Fire Emblem, though. Thanks.
Oh, did you enjoy it?
100 hours in. Yeah, I finished one route of Fire Emblem in 100 hours.
Oh, my God. That's a lot. I just booted. People kept telling me to play that, and I just booted it up like the other day.
It's my game of the year.
Really?
Yeah.
Good.
Maybe I'll have to try it then after I finish Pokemon Sword. I'm still in the midst of that.
I was just glad that it had like a story mode where I didn't have to care about the strategy because I'm not an SRPG guy.
Me neither.
I'm a JRPG guy, but not an SRPG guy. So. Like, I was a little hesitant, but everyone was like, nah, it's mostly a dating sim. And I was like, okay, really?
Well, that's what I think is so cool about it is both at the same time, because I actually really like the tactical RPG aspects.
Yeah.
And what I found so compelling about it, not to talk too much about it. We just did a podcast where we talked about it, for our best of, but is that like, it's doing both at the same time and they tie into each other. Like, the more you use your units in battle, the more that contributes to the sort of dating sim aspects and the conversations you can have, and then bonding with them more outside of the battles, like, also increases their stats in battle, right? So it all kind of ties together really nicely.
Well, that stands to me. I mean, I heard literally nothing good about Death Stranding and only good things about Fire Emblem. So. Yeah. All right. Anyway, so Lindsay, what's in the news?
Oh, all right. Yeah. Well, the big one is One Piece coming to Netflix via live action, and Oda is overseeing it.
How much is he overseeing
it? Yeah, I know.
Right? I don't like know. You want to know how much he's over? He's executive producer.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that means he stamps yes on things or doesn't.
Or Shueisha stamps yes on things on his behalf.
Yeah, because he's got to write a fucking chapter of One Piece.
is that similar to his anime movies though? Because he's produced some of the One Piece movies too.
Okay, sure. I think he's listed as a producer on all of them. But there was one that was Strong World. He actually cared about this one. And so it was like a big deal, right? Everyone was like, well, that's the Oda one, and they point to that as the Oda one.
Okay,
even though I think maybe all of them list him as. I don't know. I'm not a One Piece expert.
He does character designs for some of them. He just produces. I think some of them he's maybe more involved with. What gets me about this as far as his involvement is that you have to think that people have been trying to buy the rights to do live action One Piece for a while now.
Oh, sure.
So, they bought the rights a while ago, actually, for this. This was...
They announced it in 20...
Shoot a drop. Yeah.
Yeah, they announced it back in 2017, and then it was like mum for a while. But, I mean, I'm sure that they've been trying... to get this off the ground. Someone has been trying to get this off the ground for probably a decade or more. So I would think that something kept him from approving it until just now, really, or maybe, in the last couple years.
It depends. You know, it depends. It might have been in a situation where it was like, okay, we got to do casting. We have to do CG tests, like to get mm-hmm. the look right, and then Oda has to approve whatever it is we've made. And yeah. then so you go through these tests and you go through these casting sessions, and once he's finally said yes to enough stuff, you can start production. Right. Which I believe this is an announcement of the beginning of production, not that it's like coming this year or anything.
I don't think it's coming this year. I don't think they've released a window.
I thought the only thing that was actually announced here is just that Netflix picked it up, because the previous thing in 2017, as I remember, was that this studio, Tomorrow Studios, had basically just optioned the rights and they were just sitting on them. But like, there was no actual plan to make a show out of One Piece. This was like they had optioned the rights to Cowboy Bebop and to One Piece. And then Bebop got picked up by Netflix, but there was no news about One Piece. So I assume they were just sitting on it, like developing it, but hadn't had any buyers.
Impossible. I remember the 2017, it was a Hollywood live action television series. So I think they had said that it was going to be a TV series, a live action TV series in 2017. But, and, you know, the couple of people were involved, like they had a writer, they have a writer attached, Matt mm-hmm. Owens, and then the producers. But otherwise, yeah, no casting, no
no actual like funding or distributor, right? Because it wasn't
distributor. No. We didn't know like if it was going to be on TV or like Showtime or streaming or what. None of that was announced yet.
No. So yeah, that's what I thought this announcement was. It's basically Netflix saying like, "Hey, we agreed to do it." So I don't know if production is starting, but at least you know they have funding now. They might still be in pre-production.
Yeah, that's hard to say. Like Oda's memo when this was announced recently said, I know I announced the production of this back in 2017, but that doesn't really what does that mean?
It means somebody paid me a shit ton of money to ostensibly produce a show, and now it's in development hell for a couple of years.
Right.
that's basically what that means. I think this means that if Netflix is making a big deal out of it, they're definitely going to make it.
Right. Yeah, and they released translated versions of Oda's memo in like 800 languages on Twitter this week. Like,
yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, and it's probably gonna cost a fucking fortune.
Yeah.
Like, what do we think about like adapting One Piece for live action at all?
Thumbs down.
Yeah,
thumbs
me too.
Down. It is the cartooniest cartoon that ever cartooned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You cannot make that look good in live action.
The biggest CG expense is going to be modifying all of the women's bodies to look like
okay.
character designs.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's yeah. It's just going to be these like awkward pinched waists.
Oh
yeah.
God! It's just going to be. They're just going to like fill them in with Barbies. It's pretty much the same thing, right?
Barbie like, is much more realistic than your average Oda
now,
character design.
I guess. I'm thinking of the ones that I had as a kid. thanks, Mattel. No, I'm wondering how they could even make like Luffy's powers work, like his whole mm-hmm. Stretch Armstrong deal.
Oh,
how is that gonna work with live action without it looking like shit?
You can see it in your head.
Sure.
And it's gonna look like shit.
Yeah, it looks like a cartoon in my head.
It's gonna look
like wah is the sound effect when his arm goes out.
But you can totally picture One Piece with bad Marvel movie CG effects. Like, you could totally picture that. Like, a muted color palette. It's a little gray for some reason. The CG's all really wobbly and watery and doesn't, like, and they cut to things a little too fast in order to cover up the fact that they didn't really have time to finish the effects. You could see that in your head. You know what that looks like. That's a lot of Netflix stuff, frankly. Not to rag on Netflix too much, but like, yeah, a lot of stuff looks like that. And you could totally see it. It's just, there's no way it's going to be good. And also, that show is, what, 900 episodes long?
Yeah.
So how are they going exactly to adapt it? Is it like 10 episodes per arc or something? Like,
right now, their only intention is to do the first arc. And it will, quote, broaden from there, end quote. Yeesh. So they could take it in a completely different direction and not even, like, it be original content post.
Oh God, I'm just imagining this looking like Pirates of the Caribbean. It's making me really angry.
Like Pirates of the Caribbean 5, not like not the ones that actually had really impressive effects, which was the second one.
I not ragging on Pirates of the Caribbean, but just the idea of them trying to make it look like a Hollywood pirate movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Totes. Yeah. No, that's almost certainly what it's going to look like. What I think honestly, I said this on Twitter and I stand by it. The best thing that they could have done was spend a shit ton of money on a Lupin-esque CG movie.
Yes.
Yeah. That really respected the look of the original and actually was capable of pulling it off. Like, you could do that. And it would be great. But
there is a Lupin CG movie though in Japan.
That's what I meant. Like that specifically, like, oh, you can do this. Like they have the capability of producing Hollywood level CG, like Pixar level CG, that actually respects the look of the original and looks.
Oh, you're saying for One Piece, they should have done a CG One Piece.
Yeah, yes. they should have done a CG. Got it. Yeah, they should have done a CG One Piece, I think. And they probably will at some point, you know, God knows that franchise will never die. So I'm sure they will. But then this will also exist. So there you go. Anyway, I don't have high hopes, but I'll definitely have to watch it. So there you go.
Probably have to do a podcast about it.
Yeah.
5 years in the future or whenever it comes out.
Yeah. I don't know, man. Netflix rushes. So it's probably going to be like 3 years.
Yeah.
I would say that's a lot of money to spend. So anything else?
Yeah. We might get more Bleach? Question mark.
All right.
So at Anime Japan 2020, they're going to have a Bleach 20th anniversary stage. And they're going to announce the manga creator's new work, but they also have the voice actors from Bleach showing up on stage too. The voice of Ichigo and the voice of Byakuya. Is that how it's said?
Something like that.
Yeah. Are
going
to be there. So people are predicting we might be getting an anniversary Bleach project. Did you guys watch Bleach when that was a thing?
Oh boy. A long time ago. And I stopped after, like 40 episodes.
That's exactly where I stopped.
Yeah.
I stopped around the clown guy.
I don't remember the clown guy, but I stopped around when they had to rescue Rukia from that tower.
So, okay. Where is the soul? Is it the Soul Society?
Soul Society. Yeah. That was where I was at. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I stopped either at the end of that or somewhere in there and was like, yeah, yeah. Like,
that's about right.
That's enough of that.
It was around that point that it got kind of weird, confusing for me, because they're already dead, right? They're in the Soul Society. They're already dead, but maybe they can die again. That's when the battles got kind of weird. And I was like, what are the stakes exactly for the people that are already dead?
If you're asking me to remember plot details from Bleach.
Yeah,
I'm not asking you. I'm just saying, like, at the time, I found that confusing and I was like, and then quit watching it.
I'm surprised you even remember that.
My brain's weird.
I always thought it was really funny when I would tell people, like, yeah, you know, I got kind of tired of Bleach after a while. And people would be like, yeah, after like 200 episodes, it was just really not doing it for me. I was like, oh, no, I stopped at like 40 episodes.
Yeah, like 45 or 46. I tapped out. I'm like, OK, that was good.
Don't people totally hate the end of Bleach?
Yes,
like, I think so.
I have not heard a positive, like, people make fun of it. Like, it's not. They praise the designs and everything, and like maybe the early parts of the show. But honestly, I have not heard a single positive thing about Bleach from anyone. They remember it, which is why it's coming back. But like, yeah. I just, my impression is that people hate it.
My understanding is that people think it went on for like 5 years longer than it needed to. And the story during that 5 year period was trash.
Right. Yeah, like he couldn't quite pull it together.
Yeah, and I mean, my understanding is that it ended because Shueisha was like, all right, you're done. You're done. You're just done.
Which is,
wow, that's a very bad sign when Shueisha tells you that you need to stop your weekly Shonen Jump manga.
Yeah, you're not pulling numbers anymore, Kubo. Like, this is done.
If Shonen Jump tells you, puts their hand on your shoulder and says, your story's going on too long.
Yeah.
You've made some mistakes, baby.
Yeah.
Instead of locking you in the hotel room to make you finish the chapter, they lock you out of the hotel room so you can't finish the chapter.
They're like, go eat lunch. Just, you know, do some shopping.
Take a nap, buddy. That's ridiculous. Anyway, Bleach. So I believe we have one more item here.
Yeah. The last one is that Paramount has not given up on Transformers, but this next one might be based on Beast Wars.
Hell yeah.
Which honestly gets me fucking excited.
Yeah.
Oh, are
you? I haven't watched a Transformers movie since Shia LaBeouf left, but if they do Beast Wars, I'll come back.
Evan, are you a Beast Wars guy?
Yeah, actually, I have pretty much never seen original Transformers.
Right.
I'm like a considerably younger than a lot of people who grew up on like original Transformers. So I grew up on Beast Wars, used to be obsessed with that as a kid. I assume it's bad, like most things I liked as a kid, but I still have fond memories of it. And I think there are still a lot of those toys at my parents' house that we never threw out.
So. Yeah, I liked the spider lady.
Yeah, she was cool.
Yeah.
I only remember the ape and the velociraptor.
Yeah.
There's a velociraptor. I don't remember who was who. I think the gorilla was like Optimus Prime.
Yeah, maybe? The gorilla was Optimus Prime. The spider lady was evil, but she like came over to the good side at one point. Mm.
Did they turn into cars or robots?
Nope.
Robots. There's also a rat. I remember a rat.
I remember the rat.
It's basically instead of vehicles, it's animals.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right, yeah. And that show does have a pretty, like, there's a lot of fans of that one. It is, and I think the writing on the show is, like, better than average for a kid's show.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I actually had good taste as a kid.
Yeah, I remember it being a good show.
Yeah, I've never been a Transformers guy, although I have seen all of those movies. Never been a Transformers person. Didn't really get into Beast Wars. Today, this show looks like fucking animatics. Like,
yeah, it doesn't look good anymore. I think what helped Beast Wars out was that it was part of a block, a cartoon block. I'm trying to remember what else was on with it so I always caught it because it was also on with something else.
Was that wasn't on Toonami, was it?
It might have been on there later, but I think it was actually on WB.
Oh, got it. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm pretty sure it was a syndicated show, right?
Right, but I think it was on like the kids' WB block with like Pokemon and something else. So,
well, it's a shame there's no way to research any of this. Anyway,
yeah, someone should invent that.
I remember, like, even though now it looks like a butt, in the late 90s, that was like what, like 96 to 99 or something like that.
Don't date me.
It was, it would have been like, that would have been novel still. Like, even though, like, we had, like, Reboot.
It was around the same era as Reboot.
Yeah,
so.
Any CG cartoon that was just on TV and not in the theaters was, like, impressive.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, even though now it's like, oh, this doesn't even look finished. it would have been novel back then. And I know a lot of Transformers fans totally love the shit out of it.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the writers that they have hired for this have never written a good film. So,
who were the writers for it?
They wrote the film Murder Mystery, which is an Adam Sandler comedy on Netflix. And I believe they have one other credit here. Let me just pull this up. Both of these, also, like the writing credits listed for these writers, I was like, welp.
Oh, I see. The Amazing Spider-Man. Legend of the Sword.
The really bad Spider-Man movie. Sucked. And then there's another one that's basically just Bumblebee 2, right?
Yeah. Bumblebee 2, nah.
Sure. And, hilarious.
I'm here all week.
Evan, did you see Bumblebee?
I don't know if I've seen any of the Transformers movies.
Good for you. Wow. That's a good choice to not watch any of those. I have seen all of them in the fucking theater because I like to watch trash. Bumblebee was the only kind of okay one, but it was extremely, it was just paced. It was just like gruel. Like, yeah, I suppose it's not as bad as like the Transformers The Last Night, which just directly insulted your intelligence and basically featured Anthony Hopkins like skateboarding and farting at the same time.
What?
Wait, that sounds cool.
Not directly, of course, but if you want to see Anthony Hopkins just not give a fuck at all about anything, watch Transformers The Last Night.
In fairness, when was the last time Anthony Hopkins gave a fuck about anything?
If he's in a project he respects, you'll get a performance out of him. But in this one, he's intentionally weird. You do see him get blown. He gets blown up and his body flips end over end through the sky.
He like somersaults through the air sort of deal.
Yeah, or? It's really God, that movie. It is the last night is just flipping you off the entire, just like, you're an idiot. What did you expect? You're watching a Transformer, the fifth Transformers movie. Fine, here you go, stupid. Here you go.
Eat your Transformers gruel and you'll be happy about it.
Not even that. Just like, I don't give a shit. We're going to make some money here. Enjoy your trash. But yeah, so they're making another one of those. And it is written by the person who wrote King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, which I don't know if anyone else here saw that, but I certainly did.
And I bet.
There's one good thing in it, and that is Jude Law just eating the scenery for pretty much half the movie.
Is he playing a villain?
Yeah, he's the bad guy.
Okay.
That's the only good thing. Everything else in that movie is just bland, boring, bland. I think it's like Charlie Hunnam, who, like, if he's in the movie and if he's the main character, it's going to be boring.
Is that the guy from Sons of Anarchy?
Is he in Sons of Anarchy? No, Charlie. Well, I don't know. Maybe he is. I didn't watch that show. He was kind of a leading man in, I get him confused a lot with Sam Worthington, who was the main guy in Avatar and like Clash of the Titans and stuff like that. He was a big deal. Charlie Hunnam was a big deal for a while in like the mid 2010s. Early 2010s.
Because he was the main character of Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah, I see.
Yes.
Well, then. But he was in a lot of blockbusters, is what I'm saying. Like Pacific Rim. He was the main guy in Pacific Rim.
Oh, right.
These are all the guys who I can't keep straight because they're all just various different thumb-shaped white guys.
It's true.
Exactly. That's why a lot of their movies are not British.
This one's British. Does that help?
Okay. Yeah, not really.
No, the accent helps them sell themselves to casting directors. That's how that works.
And women.
But I have absolutely no faith that either of these will be good because the proof's always in the writing. It's always the script. It's typically not just like, oh, well, they saved it in the editing bay or the director saved it or whatever. The writing and the story like matters a lot. And these are probably not going to be good.
Aww.
But I would imagine people will enjoy, like maybe they'll give it a shot. Maybe they'll pull it together and the Beast Wars one will be interesting.
All I got to do is remake the cartoon. I'd probably go see it. So
honestly, if I were them, what I would do is, the trailer would not reveal the fact that the animals turn into robots until the very end, and Transformers is the subtitle.
Right. Uh-huh.
They're not just selling it on the brand.
So it's like Beast Wars Transformers.
Yeah.
Not Transformers Beast Wars.
Yeah, exactly. That's how I'd go with that. Just to keep it interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, so that does it for the news. So this week we're talking about something that I think is pretty controversial, and that is the attempt by not only Netflix, other companies as well, to rebrand the term anime. Now, in your lifetime, and I'll start with Evan here, what has anime meant to you specifically as a term?
That's a good question. Like within my lifetime, I'm definitely younger than you, Zach.
Oh yeah,
so everyone has a different perspective here. I feel like it's kind of always meant Japanese animation to me, though there was a period when specifically Avatar: The Last Airbender was very popular, where there was some debate among fans about whether that counted as anime, whether that was like pseudo anime or something else, right?
Right.
But I was not around for that, as I'm sure we'll get into, like debates over words like Japanimation. Like by the time I was into anime, the word was anime.
There was a brief period where like you'd go to a Suncoast and the sign would say Japanime.
Yeah. Japanime is, I've never really seen that one. Yeah, I've seen Japanimation, but yeah.
Short-lived. Yeah. Short-lived, didn't quite catch on.
Yeah.
But to you, it basically means animation produced in Japan.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I gave a very simple like Japanese animation shorthand there, but when we get into the details of it, it would be animation primarily produced in Japan.
And Lindsay, what about you?
Okay, so I'm only a little bit older than Evan, I think. So Japanimation was just dying out when I got into it. I remember specifically looking up the term in the Yellow Pages. If you don't know what that is, well, whatever. When I was trying to find a comic book shop as a kid. So Japanimation existed for a little bit, but anyone who was cool called it anime. They didn't call it that. That was considered like a bastard term or something.
A little racist, yeah.
Yeah, so anime for me was animation produced in Japan. And since I am a little bit older than Evan, the first show I saw that was trying to sort of blend into that without being from Japan was Totally Spies. I remember that being on TV.
I did watch some of that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember at the time hating it because I was like, this is just an imitation and I fuck Totally Spies. This isn't anime. This is just bleh. But other than like examples like that, like Totally Spies, it was specifically cartoons made in Japan. That was what anime was.
Yeah. Generally, like I would say my attitude towards it has always been like, okay, this is anime. It was made in Japan. It's an anime. It's a piece of animation that was made in Japan. Mm-hmm. And that's it. It's like a simple, like,
yeah,
you know, right. Like Avatar is not anime. That's how I used to feel. And I'm not, you know, we'll get into that discussion later, but I used to basically think like, well, this is an anime, but it kind of looks like it, or it's taking a lot of cues
inspired
from anime.
Yeah.
Like, you know, stuff like, you know, what is that show? Megas XLR.
Yeah.
Where it was like, yeah, that one. And then there was like, there was that show, Alexander, that, I think it was the Aeon Flux guy who made that.
Okay.
And Aeon Flux also was largely like considered like, I don't know if you guys know what Aeon Flux is.
I know what Aeon Flux is.
I know it. Yeah.
Okay. I'm old. Anyway, that show was also frequently stocked along with the anime. The ADV made an original Lady Death movie.
We don't got to talk about that, do we?
No. No, but it was definitely stocked along with the anime.
Right.
And isn't the Aeon Flux creator, I'm blanking on his name, Peter Chung?
Peter Chung, like that. Yeah.
He also had a short in the Animatrix.
In the Animatrix, right, which was a big push at the time by Warner Brothers. And the Wachowski sisters fucking love anime.
Yeah, right.
Which is why the Animatrix exists. And it's actually still quite good if you go back and revisit it.
Yeah, yeah.
But a lot of people would argue technically not anime.
That's interesting. Yeah, I would disagree about blanket calling the Animatrix not anime.
I totally would disagree. I would completely disagree. It's definitely anime. Right. And interestingly, like a couple of years ago, Crunchyroll produced that music video for the Porter Robinson song "Shelter," which was A1 Pictures. And I don't know if y'all remember this controversy, but Reddit, I think the Reddit anime, which I don't read Reddit ever because I value my mental health, but they refused to allow it to be discussed on their anime channel.
Yeah.
Because question mark? I actually don't even know what the rationalization for that was. But if you pull up Shelter and say like, well, this is an anime, your eyeballs are broken. Like, I don't know.
Well, not to dive in too deep into the details here, but my definition has nothing to do with your eyeballs, right? So like whether or not Shelter looks like anime isn't really the question for me. But the fact is, like you said, it was produced at A1 Pictures, right? So, I mean, it is a piece of Japanese animation. That's pretty hard to argue. So I also don't really understand the logic there other than just, I think they were just like, well, an American company kind of funded it and you know, was running this project because it was created by Crunchyroll. And well, so to them, the involvement of an American company, it's almost like this one drop rule that invalidates it as anime.
Like it's tainted.
So
yeah.
Yeah. So a big part of the reason that we're even having this conversation is because I've been thinking about this a lot lately. And there's a phrase that does kind of make my skin crawl for a couple of different reasons, and it's Netflix presents Kevin Smith's He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, a Netflix original anime. Okay, so this is a starting point for this. So okay. Netflix is effectively attempting to rebrand what the term anime means. Evan, what do you, so far, how has this made you feel? Just personally, how has this made you feel?
I think confused in a certain way and a little bit frustrated because, you know, when you're operating on under this idea that it means Japanese animation, a lot of people would think that it would make me angry, but it's not that I'm angry. It's just like, why are you calling this Japanese animation? It like doesn't compute until you step back and really think about like it as a branding exercise.
Right.
Right.
Which is how,
and like a marketing exercise, but like just from a logical perspective, it's like, why would you call this thing produced in like Austin, Texas, a Japanese animation?
How did you, but they did the same thing for Castlevania, which has no Japanese staff.
Yeah, yeah.
How did you feel about them calling that anime?
That's actually, that's basically what I meant when I said the produced in Austin, Texas, because right. That's at Powerhouse Animation Studios in Austin.
Right.
And that was basically my response to it. Notably, I'm not, I feel like you always have to include this caveat. Like, I have no quality opinion of things based on them being anime, right? So I'm not like, oh, this sucks, so it's not anime. It's just like, oh, well, this looks cool. Why don't you just call it what it is, which is American animation?
Yeah. Lindsay, how does it make you feel?
So it makes me, what's the word that I want here? I was going to say skeptical, but not skeptical, cynical a little bit. So for me, anime is primarily a product of Japan. It doesn't have to look a certain way. I actually think assuming that a particular visual aesthetic makes it anime is almost worse, because Japanese creators can make animation that looks like anything. It can look like ping pong. It can look like Sword Art Online. It can look like the Oscar award-winning short that I'm going to butcher the name of because it's French, but Les Cubes.
The Maison and Petit Cubes.
Yeah, yes, yeah, that yeah, one. Yeah, yeah. None of those look alike at all, but they're all anime. It doesn't have to be pigeonholed into a particular look. And I feel like Netflix's attempt at branding is they have an idea of what anime looks like, not necessarily where it comes from, but what it looks like. And they try to make things in that almost generic image that they've adopted and then calling it anime. So I feel like even though we haven't seen, I think, any production art for that He-Man cartoon, it's probably going to look a particular way. And it's the way that most American animation that wants to tap into what they think the anime audience is, they make things that sort of have the same general aesthetic, that they think this is, anime is like an aesthetic, but it could look like a lot of different things. And it's almost like pigeonholing an entire industry in another country as this one thing. And so that's what makes me feel cynical. It's like, you guys don't actually get it.
So my thoughts are kind of evolving on this particularly. What Netflix, I think, is attempting to do is specifically rebrand anime as a term for the West. Not because it is a loan word. Like we
right, right.
In Japan, it means all animation. South Park is anime. Simpsons is anime in Japan. Here, it typically is just a marker that traditionally has just meant animation produced in Japan. But it also serves as a gatekeeping term that people will use to tell, oh, that's not anime. Like, well, what is, though? Because, like, a lot of anime is also produced in Korea. You know, they'll use Korean in-betweeners and stuff like that, and Chinese in-betweeners, things like that. And if it's about nationality, that's starting to make me uncomfortable. It feels a little like it's ingrained kind of an importance to like the purity of the blood of the person who's working on it. And that bothers me.
Okay.
Because speaking as somebody who thinks that honestly, everything should just be called animation and I should be able to tell you about a great show that I love, like, hey, you should check out this drama, it's really good. Or you should check out this comedy, it's really good. Oh, by the way, it's an animated show. And it shouldn't matter. That shouldn't matter. Like, you should just be able to recommend animation to other adults without qualifying it as specific. But that's a dream world. That's never going to happen. So It's not. And so
yeah.
The attempt at rebranding anime, at first I was like, this kind of makes my skin crawl. But now I'm kind of coming around to the idea of like, there might be a few projects that seem kind of annoying to me, but I wouldn't argue that like something like Seis Manos doesn't count as anime because it's not technically made by people with pure Japanese blood. Like, that part seems fucked up to me.
Okay. This is a common point that comes up, and this is something I always try to like address early on when I'm talking to people about this, is that the nationality of the people making it is not what I'm talking about, right? So I think that I like to use like a more specific definition that is what Jonathan Clements uses in like Anime History, his book about the history of the anime industry.
Right.
And it's that like the story of anime, I think he put, I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but it's like the story of anime is the story of the Japanese animation industry, right? So that's not about the Japanese ancestry of the people making it. It's about the like geographic location of production. And, you know, that can be a little bit fuzzy, right? Because there can be, especially in the modern day, there can be like remote work and things like that, right? But I mean, it's like saying that, you know, you, especially if you're talking about like a writer, right? We're on Anime News Network, we're writing about anime. It's like, well, what is the scope of what you're writing about? Are you writing about all animation, or are you writing about like, you know, animation from a particular country, right? You can be a scholar who studies British literature, right? That has like a meaning to it that is useful, I think, in terms of like scoping it to talking about literature that came out of a particular culture. So I do agree with you on like it being used as a gatekeeping term among fans, because I think that there's no real need to shut down a conversation with somebody like, oh, that's not anime, because really, yeah, we're all just animation fans. But I think if I'm running a panel about anime, like my point of calling it anime is to say, I am here to talk about Japanese animation. I'm not here to talk about all animation, because that would just be like much too broad for the subject that I'm trying to cover.
Yeah. Yeah, it I think you're right in that it is helpful in order to, as a shorthand, it is helpful as shorthand to limit your own scope. But we were told, like, specifically by fans and stuff that we were not supposed to be covering, like, Castlevania.
Right.
And my response was, fuck you, I'm going to cover Castlevania.
I think you'd be well within your rights to do either one. Right. Obviously, I mean, that you're within your rights to do whatever you want. But I think there is a question there of like, OK, so what does, if you're the Anime News Network, like what is the scope of what you cover? Right. Are you covering Japanese animation, or are you covering all animation, or are you covering animation that is interesting to people who are interested in Japanese animation, which is not necessarily the same thing as Japanese animation only. Does that make sense? Phrase?
Yeah. And honestly, my editorial policy is the latter. It has always been like, well, I'm not going to exclude based on nationality. Like, it doesn't mean we cover everything. I'm not going to cover fucking Muppet Babies or something, but,
Aren't we though, Zach? You want to cover Muppet Babies?
Yeah, daily streaming of Muppet Babies reviews.
Wouldn't you?
But
I'm pretty sure a Japanese studio worked on that. Now that you mention it,
yeah. All right. See how it gets muddled.
Yeah, it can get muddled. And honestly, like, so we have an encyclopedia on Anime News Network. Most people probably know this, but in case you didn't, we do. And we have the Castlevania show in our anime encyclopedia. Now, I added that, and my argument was it's based on a Japanese video game, and the original creator is Japanese, so it's, like, vaguely related. Mm. And so you can sometimes get away on our website with some things like that.
So here's my other take on this, is that, like, as we become sort of increasingly a global community rather than divided by nationality, and this animation is now chiefly produced by like a handful of mega conglomerates. So it's controlled largely by Sony, AT&T, and Warner Brothers. I guess AT&T is Warner Brothers. So it's Sony, AT&T, and the third one is, why am I blanking on this?
There's another, you're going to start saying companies, and you're just going to tell me that
there's another company in there somewhere.
Yeah.
But it's a couple of mega conglomerates that produce everything. Because like now Sony owns Funimation, which owns, you know, they own Aniplex and Funimation. you know, all this stuff. So most of the stuff is coming out of the same place, same couple of companies that are competing with each other. And they're going to produce, and Netflix, that's the third one, Netflix. So,
sure.
And they dumped $500 million and more than that into the anime industry to get whatever they want. So when it's this vertically integrated, which we used to have monopoly laws that functioned in this, mm-hmm. in America, so it wouldn't have happened 20 years ago. But now that it's all vertically integrated and they're just making whatever they want to on whatever continent they want to, and it seems like anime has become sort of a stand-in term in the West, exclusively in English, to mean animation that is action and drama-oriented. It feels like that's where the word's going, or at least that's the marketing attempt.
That's the marketing attempt, I think. I don't like that marketing attempt, but...
I don't agree. I think that people talk about it that way, but even if you look at Netflix, that's not what anime means to Netflix. Like, go under the anime tab for Netflix, right? And I mean, this is what I did before this. I went through and audited, like, what are you counting as anime and what are you not counting? And what's in there are, like, comedy shows, romance shows, right? Like, things that are not, you know, this stereotype of action shows.
Right.
So what really starts to become the picture is that what Netflix is defining as anime is animation from Japan or animation that Netflix produces that they would like to market to people who watch animation from Japan.
Right.
Yeah. And I think that's a sensible take. And you're right about the anime tab. Like, the thing is, like, the number of romance and comedy shows is quite limited. It is mostly action.
But I mean, even probably the best two examples of this, I think, from Netflix are that the anime tab includes Agretzko and Rilakkuma and Kaoru, which is a stop motion show
and
about like a mascot teddy bear character.
and like High Score Girl, you know, which is a comedy.
Yeah, right.
But the rest of it, like, those are three examples out of dozens and dozens of shows that are pretty much targeting the salaryman demographic for the most part. Like, that's long been what they've been chasing based on their output. I forgot they were making a Spriggan. Anyway,
I forgot about that too.
And like, I'm not so certain that I have that much of a problem with that. Like, I don't know. It feels like, is it just at this point, like, how much of this is a sort of meaningless pedantry and how much of it is substantively important to discussion? Like, you're right in that it's important to limit your scope. And people know what you mean when you say anime.
That's my primary thing. I mean, I don't think it is the, you know, most important existential thing to fight over. To some degree, I think it's actually just sort of interesting as someone who's interested in words and their definitions, to kind of like think through what it means.
Yeah.
But I do think it's less important for fans. I think it can still be important for fans to some degree, but it's most important for people who write and speak about this stuff to have terms to communicate what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Right. Because I already run into problems where I do Anime Burger Time and people are like, well, are you including like Steven Universe? I'm like, well, no, because this is a panel about Japanese animation. Like, if I was doing hamburgers in any piece of animation, that's like a whole different subject.
It's hours.
Right? Yeah.
It's a 12-hour panel on Saturday. Yeah.
Do you guys feel like the resistance to the change might also be partially because it's pushed by a company versus happening naturally through the audience?
Yeah. I mean, that's a big part of it for me because, I mean, the use of anime in English is the result of like more natural fan usage, right? Obviously then picked up by companies and used for marketing. But I think there's this thing where people try to kind of wield, the sort of descriptive versus prescriptive dictionary kind of thing where they're like, well, words change. So you can't debate, you know, the natural changing of how people use words. But on the flip side, I mean, if words should be allowed to naturally change, then why am I not allowed to criticize someone right in front of my face trying to deliberately change the meaning of a word?
I think so. It's an interesting conversation to have. Like, none of us are like angry about it. It's just
no.
I think it's kind of interesting and it's worth criticizing, but I think in a friendly way. I'm not like super pissed at Netflix.
Yeah, no, I do whatever you want. I can't do nothing about it. I'm sitting in a
Netflix
apartment.
Has way more money than me, so they can do whatever the fuck they right. want. Yeah. But
yeah, I don't know. What Lindsay, what do you think?
I think part of my cynicism towards it is because it does feel like a marketing move, and my attitude naturally is to hate that. It doesn't mean like, you know, I'm aggressively angry about it, but if Netflix is trying to change a term specifically because they want to sell me something and I'm their target, I want to flip them off. So
sure.
Yeah.
I mean,
it just feels like it's, for me, it doesn't feel like it's happening naturally. I don't admonish or think that, you know, fans of animation who've gotten into, or fans of anime that have gotten into the animation industry and are inspired by the things they love and want to make something like that, even though they're not Japanese or not working in Japan, aren't allowed to do that. Like, I don't think they're making a lesser product by definition for that reason. But it, having sat in on Netflix panels at conventions and whatnot, it does feel disingenuous when the PR person's up there like talking about it and they're not acknowledging the elephant in the room.
Also, and notably, I mean, there's a lot of this thing where people try to frame this as, you know, attacking the creators.
Right.
There aren't that many of the creators who are actually calling their stuff anime. Like that is a lot of it is coming from marketing, because a lot of these people, they like anime. They're inspired by it. They want to make cool animation.
Mm-hmm.
Great. I mean, I haven't watched all of Castlevania, but what I've seen looks awesome. Mm-hmm. Right. I think it's a very cool show. Like, I think this is something that matters more for Netflix trying to sell the shows than it does for the people making it. Like, they want to make animation. I don't think they super care whether they get to call it anime or not.
And I don't feel like they need the term specifically to sell it either. We've, over the last decade and a half or so, there's become an American adult animation market.
Yeah.
That's, you know, doing really well. There's, you know, and there's a lot of diversity within it about what kind of shows there are, whether it's like something like Moral Oral or Steven Universe, which, you know, has adult fans as well as, you know, mm-hmm. kids. You can do all kinds of things within the American animation industry. You're not as pigeonholed as you used to be. So then for Netflix to show up and be like, yeah, but we're going to call it anime because that's the target demographic. It feels like the word is a result of target demographics.
Right.
And
I think the thing that bothers me a lot about it, to your point, is that I think it does sell both Japanese and American, in this case, animation short. You know,
yeah.
it kind of like manages to be condescending to both of them at the same time. Like,
right.
All Japanese animation is mature action cartoons, and American animation is not allowed to be mature action cartoons.
So we have to call it. Yeah.
Well, right. Isn't that central to what they're trying to do with the rebranding, though? Isn't it central to that? Like, you're right in that there are comedy shows and stuff on under the anime tab, but in general, isn't the attempt at basically saying, like, adult cartoons are okay, too? Like, it's okay to enjoy this?
Well, that's cool, but there are lots of adult cartoons that are not anime, according to Netflix.
Sure. Well, sure, but you're talking about, like, you know, BoJack Horseman and stuff like that. Like,
right.
That's what you're talking about. But that also falls under, like, the typical, what people would typically refer to as quote-unquote adult animation, which would be, like, Family Guy, Rick and Morty.
Yeah.
Something like BoJack Horseman. Like, if Cartoon Network suddenly starts calling Rick and Morty anime, what... Where
I'm
are
banging down the gates. I'm here for the anime Cartoon Network.
Yeah. I was gonna say also like Venture Brothers, Super Jail, like there's mm-hmm. so
there's
much
so much of it. Yeah. There's a
yeah,
ton of
and it all looks different.
Everything you just listed is a comedy.
Okay.
No, I understand your point there, right? That like Castlevania tonally is a like genre wise is a very different kind of show.
Yeah. Boy, it gets confusing. I don't know. I suppose the thing that I've kind of settled on is like, okay, if the term's going to evolve, that's fine. Like that's fine. And it doesn't matter to me the nationality of whoever worked on something. And if it's going to change, frankly, as a person who writes about this stuff for a living and has been a lifelong fan of all animation, not just anime. Like mm-hmm. I've been a cartoon fanatic for my whole life. I dedicated a 20-year career to talking about it. To me, it's okay if it evolves. It's just it does need to make sense. Like
that's my main issue.
Yeah.
I mean, here's like a thing that I haven't really brought up yet, which is that these two definitions exist simultaneously. And I think despite Netflix's best efforts to market their new definition, it is not going to completely replace the old one. And it's already confusing. It's going to get confusing, right? Because if they take anime to mean action, you know, mature action cartoons, now there, if we accept Netflix's definition, there is a lot of Japanese animation that is no longer anime.
Yeah, right? Totally.
That starts to be very confusing now, right? Because there's still going to be a lot of people who think of it as Japanese animation. And now you have to have an even worse debate where you're like, well, actually, Agretzko's not anime, right?
Yeah. And you drop into the abyss of pedantry. And that's even more frustrating than just trying to simplify the term.
I agree with the point you made earlier, Zach, that like we should just call it all animation. That's ideal, right?
But
maybe in an ideal world, I would go back in time and instead of killing Hitler, I would just remove the word anime from the American lexicon. Well, just refer to it as Japanese animation.
Maybe do both of those things.
Why not? You've got a time machine. At
you've
this
got
point.
Time
why
for
twice.
Yeah. You got time for two things. You can make two stops.
Maybe Hitler first, and then I'll fix anime. The second most important thing.
Well, I was also thinking, you know, we've got other terms like this in other areas of film, too. Like, there's noir, but French noir is considered a specific thing. And there might be other films that aren't French that are pulling from French noir because it's looked upon so well. But it's still not French noir. It's inspired by French noir. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it makes sense because and also, like, you know, we've had, even though their animation industry has kind of failed to take off completely, the original productions that were sort of anime style from Korea, like there was that movie, what was it called? It was called Wonderful Days or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Sounds familiar,
yeah, it was a long time ago, but we referred to it as Korean anime. And then there are shows, we've had several shows that come over from China that we refer to as anime from China,
or like Chinese co-pros.
I really considered that. You know, that I at this point, I think I'm slightly softer on this point than I would have been before, where I think it would be acceptable to call something American anime in the sense that Lindsay is saying, of being like specifying this is not Japanese, but it is American animation that pulls from the conventions of Japanese animation and similarly for Korean anime.
And I think implies that it's for adults. I think that's the implication because anime has meant that for a very, very long time, you know,
in the US,
not kids stuff.
Right. We haven't even referenced that ad for the entire episode. I'm very proud of us.
And I mean, we coined a similar term for OEL,
right?
And when we started having American-made comics that were inspired by manga. And when they started bringing over Korean comics, those were called manhwa, which feels like a Korean word that still pulls from manga as the original word, or maybe it's vice versa. I don't know.
It might be just like, because there's some similar words and sounds in Korean, so it might be pulling from the same roots.
You want to get even more confusing. You think about the manga thing because, like, you could look at an example like Felipe Smith, who moved to Japan, killed himself making Pipochu, and is he a manga?
I stand by this definition, which I give credit to Daryl Surratt for. He's posted about this a couple times, and I think this is a great example of like the geographic origin being the definition,
right?
Which is when Felipe Smith made MBQ for Tokyo Pop, that is an American comic, right? When he moved to Japan and made Pipochu for Kodansha, that's a manga. It was published in Japan. Doesn't matter that he's American, right? He made it in Japan for a Japanese company. It's like it's a Japanese comic.
And that makes sense. There's been tons of non-Japanese people who have had comics go over there. Like Ninja Slayer, isn't that actually Brazilian, the guy who makes that? No? Have I fucked this up? Oh, God, Evan's laughing at me.
I'll keep up appearances here and say, yes, Ninja Slayer is based on a series of self-published American novels by Bradley Bond and Philip Ninja Morzes, who are real guys.
Right. Well,
the Japanese guys, you took on American pseudonyms, isn't it? God damn it. Okay. Well, anyway, there have been others.
Don't trust anything about Ninja Slayer, I'll tell you.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah. Don't trust Ninja. That's the lesson of Ninja Slayer. Yeah. Yeah. Everything about Ninja is lies and deception.
Yeah, I think like you can really get into the weeds on that, but I think the geographic argument makes sense. The only thing is, you could not possibly expect Netflix to say Kevin Smith's He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, an American original anime. You will not get them to agree to that because it's a mouthful. And
I'm not sure why they need to say anime there at all, though. I mean, that could
look.
Just
be, I don't.
Everyone's going to assume He-Man's animated, right?
It's my my favorite example because it is the only one that actually really bugs the shit out of me. Like, I had no problem with Seis Manos being called. They marketed it as like, this is the first Mexican anime, and I was like, cool, all right, like that sounds good to me. You know, and that's fine with me. But I wouldn't expect a marketing department to change their language based on the country of origin, I suppose.
By the way, since we were talking about Korean anime, I did want to point out another interesting like Netflix catalog side note. There's a show called Flowering Heart on Netflix, which is looks identical to any, you know, kids centric Japanese magical girl show. Right. Looks like a Pretty Cure or something.
Sure.
Okay.
It's Korean language, Korean animated. It is not marked as anime on Netflix.
Huh.
I mean, I just imagine there's a boardroom of people and they're just like, it's like 12 marketing executives and they're like, so what do we do with this term? Is this, and they'll like go through slides. Like, is this one anime? No. Is this one anime? Oh, it looks like it has action in it. Yep. Is this one anime?
Do you think men between the ages of 18 and 25 will click on this?
Would someone,
yes or no?
Would someone in Japan fall asleep watching this on their phone on the subway at 1 a.m.? Yes. Next. Like that it feels like that's sort of the arbitrary process by which this is taking place.
I think for me, like if this definition becomes the very confusing one we just described of like, okay, it's Japanese stuff or it's things that meet this arbitrary marketing definition, like frankly, not to be like, I'm going to take my toys and go home, but I'll just stop calling it anime when I talk about it, you know, like, because it's no longer useful to me as someone who writes and speaks about it. Like, I'm going to need to just say Japanese animation in most of the cases when I talk about it.
Well, it's funny because like, anime is now quite mainstream. It's not a niche little thing anymore. And in large part due to Netflix's efforts to popularize it. But it's just generally become a much bigger thing over the years. And so like, I'll go on a date and they'll ask me what I do for a living and I'll say like, oh, I write about anime for a living. And they're like, oh, and they'll tell me their favorite shows. And they immediately know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
They will never ever say like Seis Manos. They will never say that because they'll be like, is that anime though? It's like, I thought it was just stuff from Japan. Like, they're confused.
Yeah.
So So here's a question, Evan. I don't know if you can actually directly speak to this or not. Does Crunchyroll intend on marketing their original programming, like High Guardian Spice, and there's another one I think they have in the works? Are they going to call that anime? Because it's produced up the street here.
I definitely cannot speak to that.
Okay, you're like, I signed an NDA. So.
I do some work related to that still with them, so I'm not like related to their originals. So cannot comment at all. I also wouldn't even say that I know, but I
can
tell you.
Yeah. But I want. That's a big question. Is like, are they going to, when that eventually surfaces, are they going to call it anime? And then does that throw this whole thing back into the broiler, basically? Like,
it'd be interesting to see what they do. I am skeptical. I've said that so many times. I'm skeptical that if they chose to do that, I don't know if it would be a good call, just because I feel like their audience compared to Netflix's audience is even more otaku, and they might be more resistant than the casual Netflix viewer.
Yeah, I think that's probably true.
Like, there might be riots, is what I'm trying to say.
There was some fan disgruntlement when Ruby was on Crunchyroll.
Yeah.
Marked as an anime, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, right, Ruby. That's another one where it's like, But you know, they market it as anime. Like,
you know what I'll also say, sort of in Netflix's defense, when pointing out something about Crunchyroll here, because I was complaining about, you know, Netflix's tagging, having things tagged as anime or not as anime.
Yeah.
Crunchyroll has Happy Tree Friends, or at least they did last time I checked.
Oh God, that's site. A thing still.
And yeah, okay. And it is marked as anime, but it's only marked as anime because Crunchyroll doesn't have a tagging system that includes non-anime things, right? So like any show is going to be marked as an anime. So that's just a point that is like just the fact that maybe some of these things on the tagging side of Netflix are just like mistakes and not very deliberate marketing.
Well, I'm pretty sure Thunderbolt Fantasy is tagged as anime.
Oh yeah, Thunderbolt Fantasy is another good example of this, that it's not anime, but not for the reason that people like to debate usually about like geographic origin. It's not anime simply because it's not animation.
Yeah. Well, I mean, well,
isn't it stop motion animation?
Nope. No,
no. Okay. The puppets are done like live. Okay.
Yeah. It's puppetry, which is a different art form, but largely lumped into the same box as animation a lot of the time. Like, it's because it's not real people on screen. There are no humans.
But it's technically live action because the models or the puppets are moving in real time.
Yeah.
It's
right?
Hybrid of live action. Like, yeah, to Zach's point, right? Like, it has a lot in common with animation because it is not real people. But then, technically,
it's kind of
via live action.
Yeah, it's like a weird thing to discern. Like, if I film my son's Matchbox cars going down a ramp, is it animation or not? I mean, I didn't animate anything. Oh,
now we're getting into, is all film just animation of still photos?
Well, technically.
Technically, yes, it is.
It's all an illusion.
The oldest animation argument in the book.
Okay, now we're getting into some galaxy brain stuff here. I don't know. I suppose, I land on the idea that I'm okay with the term being mutable, and I'm okay with it meaning several things. And since I have to pay attention to this stuff for a living, because I'm paying attention to the full context, I can make the call case by case on whether or not I think, like we'll probably talk about Kevin Smith's He-Man on this show, but that's because I can talk about whatever I want to on this show, but I'm not so certain that we will cover it on the site.
Right.
You know, it's one of those things, you just got to make it case by case if they're going to do this marketing stuff. It's like, but I do think it's totally fucking pointless to get angry about it and and gatekeep. I think that's totally pointless.
I had a conversation with someone on Twitter where they got pretty angry at me and they were like, you're gatekeeping. And the way I was pointing it out to this person, which they seemed to take to this pretty well, is I was like, the point of this is absolutely not to gatekeep. Like, we're all animation fans. If you like Castlevania, that's cool. I also like animation. Welcome to the club, right? And the point of my kind of pedantry about this is just, what is the word that we use to describe animation from Japan? Or is there not a word for that? Like, whatever we land on, we're all fans of the same art form, ultimately. Right.
Yeah. And does that same person get pissed off about there being Doctor Who and My Little Pony panels at anime conventions?
Well, I was a little bit bothered by that, but not.
Well, that's another boss.
Yeah, that's a little different. I was not angry at those fans. I think they are welcome at the con, but I think it wasn't great to have
so many
lots and lots of events. Lots of events that are not about the stated subject of the convention at the convention.
Yeah, bronies are over. Like, that's not really even a thing anymore. But like, I'm sure it is, but it's very quiet and off in the corner now. Thankfully, but they were like half a dozen pony panels at every anime convention you would go to for a really long time. I have noticed
the best pony panel of all was Vinny Avarello's panel called Ponies at Anime Boston, which a bunch of bronies showed up, and it was just a panel about baby horses in anime.
That's good. That's good. I have noticed like a steep drop off in that kind of thing at the, because I only really go to the big ones. I go to like Otakon AX San Diego, which is not an anime convention at all. But those are the ones I go to, and I've noticed like, because Lindsay and I have to go through the entire programming schedule to plan
these things out.
Yeah, it's a super great time. we have to go through the whole programming schedule, and I have really noticed like a steep drop off in like things that are like, that's not anime. Like there's not a panel about Stargate or something like that. Like it's pretty dominated by, I would say 99% is totally just anime and anime, directly anime adjacent things. A big rise in influencer panels where it's like,
yeah,
meet this YouTube guy or meet this Instagram person.
But still connected, right? I mean, it's like meet this anime YouTuber. That's still anime related.
Yeah, like I'm about to run an interview with someone who's going to be on RuPaul's Drag Race, who's not Japanese, but they their whole look is inspired by anime. Does that?
Yeah,
is that a corruption or is it?
No,
like,
that's just an expression of their interest.
Yeah, I think so. So you have to be. I think ultimately, you really have to be open-minded about it, without completely making the word totally meaningless.
You know what is, I think, a very useful frame for this. Again, I'm pulling here from Jonathan Clements, who I think has a good take on it. Is in Anime a History, he addresses, you know, at the beginning, because it's a very kind of academic text, he's like, what, you know, what is the scope of this? And he talks about how what he is covering is the story of animation from Japan, right?
Right.
And so for him, that includes things that you might not say are strictly anime, includes things that are like works for hire, that are
like the Rankin Bass stuff and like,
yeah, like The Last Unicorn.
Yeah.
So things like that are maybe more American animation in some ways than they are Japanese, in terms of like, they were written in America. They were distributed in America, but they're part of the story of anime, right? They're Japanese animators working on them. And so to me, like the thing that I, as a writer, that I think about is, if I were writing a book about anime, would I cover this subject? Right. And then on the flip side, you know, if I were writing a book about American animation, would I cover this? And so, yeah, like, I think there's a lot of stuff. I think stuff, the thing like Castlevania is like, yeah, well, I probably wouldn't cover it in a book about Japanese animation, right?
Maybe about Japanese video games.
Right. I probably would cover it in a book about American animation. But like, in some sense, maybe it deserves a footnote here or there, right? Maybe it's a section on things in other countries that were inspired by anime. So it's in some tangential way, it's part of the story of anime, right?
So where would you put The Hunchback of Notre Dame 2, which was animated by Disney Animation Japan, which is one of the companies that they bought that was formed out of ex-Topcraft employees, and they've made like a bunch of stuff, but they redesigned the characters completely to fit the house style. Which looks like, you know, a Topcraft kind of a thing. Where would you put that thing? Which is terrible, by the way.
I usually put that stuff under a category which I haven't yet brought up here, which is like my catch-all midpoint category, which is anime co-productions, right? So this is something that, like, it's part of the story of anime, like I said, but it's also, yeah, part of the story of another country's animation, right?
Yeah,
and it's I kind of put it in there. It's like Shelter is kind of that too, right? Where it's kind of part of both, but in that sense, like something that's in that midpoint, it belongs in a conversation about anime. It belongs on Anime News Network, I think, right?
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, definitely.
It belongs on the anime subreddit.
I think it. I think I would file that more under like fun fact.
Yeah.
Did you know?
Trivia.
Yeah, trivia. It's like trivia because it's not really important. Like, it's not how you categorize things. Like, you just like cartoons. You like animation.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's fine. And it's all okay. But, you know, I do think you risk something by making the word anime basically meaningless. I do think you risk something there. I'm just not quite sure what it is yet or what the future holds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think worst case scenario is like Evan said, the word starts to dissolve and we just replace it with Japanese animation because we can't use it in a meaningful way anymore.
The worst,
the same way that Japanimation dissolved, you know, we quit using Japanimation.
Yeah, thank God we stopped using that.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, the worst case is every time you say anime, you have to then follow up by telling somebody what you mean.
Right.
Oh God. Yeah, I can imagine that future. Anyway, we got a bunch of Twitter questions, so why don't we go ahead and get to these?
Woo!
All right. Okay. Oh, a lot of these are just telling me what anime is supposed to mean.
Some people use it as like a vent.
Yeah, more like Twitter answers.
Yeah.
Nerdly there says, is there one particular series you would consider to be the one that put the definition of anime in question?
Mm.
For instance, I can remember similar discussions happening when Avatar The Last Airbender came out. In my opinion, the most recent example is definitely Castlevania. But Evan, what do you think?
Well, I think the question is seemingly kind of talking about the earliest example. I don't think Avatar is the earliest example, but it's the earliest big one I experienced directly. I'm sure there's an earlier one, like from older anime fandom.
I don't think so. Not that I can think of.
I saw a couple of those like CoPro stuff as it's like a kid that looking back on kind of put a question mark on it, like Nemo's Adventures in Slumberland.
Yeah. Little Nemo is a really interesting example.
Yeah. Right. It's based on like a French newspaper comic. And I don't know who the director and writer of it are, I assume.
Nobody really knows because it went through so many people.
Yeah. But then, you know, animated over in Japan. So.
Yeah. I don't know what I couldn't tell you what the very first one was, but I can tell you that the most recent relevant example that really has kind of thrown this into question and kind of started the entire thing, or the at least sort of jump started the conversation again, is Castlevania.
Yeah, for sure.
I think so. Branko Berkson asks, what do you think of the Plus Ultra Fuji TV block that seems to exist just to partner with Netflix? All of their shows have elements aimed to appeal to international audiences the same way Fuji TV's similar Noi Tamino block appeals to non-otaku. Well, good for them. They sure do have a lot of money.
Yeah.
I don't really have an opinion on that one. It's like,
Yeah,
I think it speaks to the fact that the Japanese industry is paying a lot of attention to the West, right? And or to the international more generally.
Definitely.
Yeah, and that they are making stuff with international fans and international distributors in mind, which is cool, I think, you know, to the point about animation being more globalized.
Well, and without that production money, we wouldn't be getting 40 shows a season.
Yeah.
So it's necessary to survive at this point, I think, for a lot of studios. Chris Kane asks, ooh boy, this is a really long question. How has fandom changed from early Robotech generation until now? Well,
that's not a me question. It's from personal experience. But
yeah, I was pretty young when Robotech was on Toonami, so I can speak to later than that, but not starting there.
Well, back in the Robotech days, you had to, you know, all right, old man time. Back in the Robotech, and now let me get it just straight. I am not that old. I was a child in the 80s. I was a kid when Robotech was on the air. But
what was it like watching Astro Boy when it first came out, Zach?
well, Sonny, yeah. Had to get my VHS from those are the earliest possible days of anime fandom. You know, these are old stories. You had to trade tapes. You had to go to a place. Sometimes you go to an anime club screening and you would watch a raw video and they would hand you a synopsis, somebody would write a synopsis out, and you would read the synopsis and watch the show without subtitles because they didn't have the capability to subtitle things, but they could get the video.
I have secondhand nostalgia for that. I wish I lived through that.
No, you don't.
You do not.
I used to send cash in an envelope to Texas, and they'd mail me tapes back, and I'd wait over a week so I could watch the next episode of Violinist of Hanlon. So,
oh god,
no one wants that.
Sit through that slideshow. Anyway,
it was a good show, though.
famously not animated.
Mm-hmm. I bought all the tapes, though. I didn't stop.
Yeah, so. A lot of people do like it. I think we showed the whole thing of that in my anime club. Honestly, the advent of broadband internet changed absolutely everything for everyone all over the world in every possible way. And it did the same thing to anime fandom. Now fans are connected to each other. Anime is now mainstream. You can walk into any store pretty much and buy, like, I was in a Target the other day and they had My Hero Academia t-shirts and Dragon Ball shirts and stuff, Sailor Moon. Like, that stuff is global. It's not like a niche little, only us secret nerds and our secret nerd club know about it. Like, mm-hmm. it's as popular as anything else. So that is really how things have changed. Anime is now mainstream, and it did not used to be. It did used to be secret club for nerds.
Yeah.
And that's, I'm not sad about that part going away. It's fine.
Right.
Things change. They evolve. I'm happy these creators are getting more money for their work. So in short, and that is a That is a massive understatement. In short, that's basically how things have changed. The internet changed everything. Okay. Markalepsy asks, is it even possible for today's kids to tell the visual or artistic distinction? My daughter is almost 12, and although she loves tons of quote-unquote legit anime, she gives zero fucks about liking anime-influenced stuff equally. My Gen X snob fanboy purity tests are meaningless to her. Honestly, I could not imagine Zoomers giving a shit about the definitions. I cannot imagine that.
Kids don't care. I can speak to that as a parent. Like, my son has watched My Hero Academia, but he also really likes, what's it, Star and the...
Oh, yeah, Forces of Power, what is it? Star versus the Forces, something, whatever.
Yeah, you know, and
whatever. It's on
and Amphibious, and he likes, he'll watch anything that's animated. He knows that it's anime because he knows what my job is, and so that gives him like a different kind of exposure. Maybe the mom works for anime, so this is anime. But yeah, he doesn't really draw a distinction. It's all just fun cartoon time. So
yeah, I think this again underscores the fact that, like, ideally we would just call it all animation and only specify the country it's from when it's relevant.
Yeah,
I wish. But
I will say, just on the stylistic point, I'm sure that the kids can't tell, but I can tell you that all of the shows that people claim are, well, it's American anime and it looks indistinguishable from anime, it doesn't. It's so easy to tell from like a single shot.
Oh, totally. Yeah. But you know, we are otaku. Like, we can tell the difference immediately.
Yeah.
Well, it's always been the same with when they had the OEL manga too. They're like, this is English language manga. I'm like, I get that this is manga inspired, but I know that this isn't manga. It doesn't actually.
Right. Yeah.
Again, look. Not a quality thing.
It's no, it's, like you worse, can just tell. Just
I can tell where this was made pretty easily.
Yeah. Like, look at, like, for example, like, you know, Tiny Toon Adventures. Mm-hmm. The TMS animated episode looked totally different from the one animated in Korea, from the one animated in China, from the one animated in the US. They all look different. Like, and that show famously has, like, not, you know, by the way, not saying watch Tiny Toons. It's not a very good show, but hasn't aged well. But the dramatic change in style between the three or four studios that they use, and I think they used like a half a dozen studios on that show. You can tell which ones were animated in Japan, like by TMS. Like, you fucking tell. It's easy. All right, so Eeper's Choice asks, Netflix was supposed to free animators from the committee system. When manga teamed up with Bandai and Kodansha, the Ghost in the Shell movie was different from anything at that point. So if Netflix is paying for all of this, anime or otherwise, why haven't studios produced anything like that? Interestingly, they are making a Ghost in the Shell movie.
right. Yeah, that's a good question, actually.
Is this just more like, why is most of Netflix stuff at Polygon Pictures sort of question, or?
Well, it's just like Netflix, the shows that Netflix is producing thus far, I think, don't feel like radical departures from what would have been produced anyway.
Oh, okay. So they don't feel like these big expressions of like artistic intent that couldn't get approved before because they weren't commercial sort of thing?
Well, not necessarily that. Not necessarily that. I think it's like these people are only answering to Netflix now instead of seven or eight different companies that are all providing funding.
Right.
But what's being produced doesn't particularly feel any different from what has come before.
Right.
It's not like we're getting radically different shows or like, you know, like you were saying, like truly artistic, like, flights of fancy or creativity or whatever. I would argue something like Devilman Crybaby is, but Netflix only licensed that. They didn't actually produce it.
It would have been made without them.
Yeah, that would have been made anyway. So it's, I don't know, it's an interesting question. They are trying to make things that appeal to a Japanese audience, and there are proven, this is not a company that is interested only in art.
No, I think that's a really good point. Maybe the biggest point there is that people think about Netflix's anime strategy as being centered on the US, but I still think a lot of it is centered on capturing the Japanese market,
which means
producing stuff that competes directly with shows on Japanese TV.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're totally right. I know that to be a fact. So yeah.
On the other side though, I think that there's a little bit of maybe an element of like when you're producing shows for a streaming service, they're I think they're kind of just like, well, we just need stuff to get people in. And it's not necessarily that all of those things have to be groundbreaking, right? It's not like you're releasing this feature film that needs to get a ton of kind of critical attention on it. You just need stuff, right? You just need like stuff covering enough of your bases to get people to subscribe.
Yeah, you're not launching a 4-year consideration campaign for Be the Beginning. You're just
I watched that show.
Don't Spoil Royal says, given that they have seemingly no issues with some of their live action content, why do you think Netflix has been reticent to embrace the weekly release model with anime?
Oh boy.
Their numbers say that they should put it all down at once for some reason.
I mean, I don't know. I predict, now this is just pure speculation, that they are going to dump the everything is binge watch. Because honestly, I can't think of an anime that they've released week to week here. Did they do that with...
They did for anything.
Did they do it for Violet... I don't think... Yeah, right. I don't think they do it with anything. They didn't do it with Violet Evergarden, right? They did it in some territories, but not in the U.S.
Right.
So,
I mean, I do think it's probably just that their data has shown, at least historically, that people prefer the or not that people prefer the watch everything, right? That's the thing that people, I think, get twisted sometimes. Like when fans think about it, they're like, well, I don't like it, right? And Netflix is not deciding what to do based on whether you like it. They're deciding what to do based on whether people subscribe to Netflix.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And their subscriptions were down last year. So we'll see what happens.
Okay.
Yeah, especially since Disney Plus, if they've had success with their week-to-week release, I don't know, maybe that might encourage Netflix to change up theirs.
In my opinion, the week-to-week, if you're what you're concerned about is social media metrics, conversation, people talking about the show for a longer period of time, which gets more people to watch it over a longer period of time, like if that's what you're concerned with, and... You know, there's not a marketing department in the world that just doesn't care about social. You release it week to week.
I've had a long running half baked theory about this, that there is a benefit to the dumping all at once strategy in that it gives people less time to catch up to spoilers. Right. So that like it all dumps at once. Your friends already watched it and are already tweeting about the ending. And so you need to jump on it right now.
It's like a peer pressure
being
thing.
Able to catch up. Yeah, yeah.
Right, which gives it better metrics in its first 72 hours or whatever.
Yeah. It puts peer pressure on everyone to watch it now. You can't kind of be like, all right, well, I'm 2 episodes behind, but I'll catch up and then I'll be with everybody.
Right.
Yeah. I would imagine these are all conversations that happen inside these marketing meetings. Like, it has to be. I'm you know, when there's that much money at stake... you need to be like hyper concerned about exactly all of these metrics. And
these are not arbitrary decisions.
Yeah. Right. And it's really complicated. So you need like a lot of people working on it. Anyway. Okay. So America's Darling Tobias McNabb asks, it seems that both sides of this discussion feel very strongly. What compromise do you see? Do you think a compromise is possible with the corporate backing of one side versus the other?
I think so. Is this like a Netflix is money? I'd love to compromise.
Yeah, really.
Netflix is going to do whatever the fuck they want, and we're going to talk however we want to talk, and that's just it. Really.
I absolutely refuse to see it as some kind of a war or a fight.
No, yeah.
It's stupid. Like, not that the question is stupid, but people who do see it that way, it strikes me as kind of dumb, like a little aggro. Like do you need to be mad about this? No. Like, that's silly. It doesn't make sense.
All three of us could disagree and then go get burgers and it would be fine.
So. Yeah. Right, Evan?
totally. Always down for burgers. Not actually always. I don't eat burgers for every meal, despite what people think.
We can get chicken sandwiches then. How about that?
Sure.
You know what I'll say for the compromise question, though? That, like... I think that the position that I have said here is something of a compromise in that, like, I'm willing to go with a definition that is not the one that I started with if it makes sense, right? So the only place where I'm going to really dig my heels in is when there's a completely nonsensical definition, which is kind of where it's at right now. But I understand, whatever. Netflix is trying to come up with something that will sell their products.
Mm.
So... Yeah, I think that's maybe the compromise position. It's just like, whatever you do, it had better be something that's like a usable word that doesn't exist only to sell your products.
It doesn't confuse the user base.
Right.
Yeah. Or render the word meaningless. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Ruben Rosario asks, given that there's all this interest from Netflix, Sony, and other companies globally, is it more likely that animators and other workers... Oh, God. I'm just going to start crying. Is it more likely that animators and other workers in the industry will see some of that money? No.
No.
Nope. No. No. We live in a cursed world, my friend. It is cursed. Cursed
is one C word I would use to describe it.
Oh, it's bad out there. Man, yeah. I hope that... I hate to be so cynical about it, but I don't think it's going to change, and that fucking sucks so bad. Like,
yeah, this is a larger conversation.
Yeah, and it's heartbreaking, but, and maybe we'll just move on to the next one. The answer is no. Yeah. Okay. How would the presence of this, Bokusachi asks, how would the presence of anime segments in larger non-Japanese works impact how we define anime? For example, Yuasa's Adventure Time episode or IG's Kill Bill scene.
And there's also the Animatrix and Batman.
Yeah, all those. Knight. And Riddick and all that stuff. They made a bunch of those.
All right. I come back to the story of anime thing. I mean, those are all part of the story of anime, right? And you wouldn't call the whole show anime. You could argue that the episode is anime and that it's Japanese animation. But yeah, I mean, it's relevant. I mean, it would be relevant to talk about on Anime News Network, which is a pretty good metric for it.
Yeah,
we covered that Adventure Time episode in our news section. So.
I think it's easy to just say, like, well, Kill Bill has an anime part.
Yeah,
like, it does. There's an anime part.
Masaaki Yuasa did a guest anime episode on Adventure Time.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I saw it. It was good.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I don't know. Is it an anime? Yeah, sure. I guess. Whatever. Let's see. This is interesting. He says... continues to say, for a really petty example of a kind of gatekeeping I've seen, my anime list lists Eikura-chan as having 11 episodes instead of 12 because Nagahama's puppet episode doesn't count as anime, which I think is really silly. That's silly. That's silly as fuck.
You know what's so funny about that is if you did that for Adventure Time, you would then cut the Yuasa episode from Adventure Time's episode count.
Because it's not a cartoon or it's
right, it
not...
wouldn't count as an American animated episode.
We just single it off in the encyclopedia as a singular, like, OAV, Adventure Time OAV.
Yeah. So here's what I would say, maybe a little bit agreeing with the My Anime List thing, but ultimately disagreeing, is that the puppetry segment of Eikura-chan is not anime, but it's a one-off episode in an otherwise animated series. So it's pretty dumb to not count that episode as an episode of this animated series, right? I mean, things can mix animation and live action. It's, you know, a live action show that has a single episode that's animated is still, that's still an episode of that show. It's like insane to leave it out.
So it's like only half of the episodes in Pop Team Epic anime because sometimes the characters are made of felt or like...
Well, to be clear, the episode in Eikura-chan is not animated. It's like, you know, it's puppetry.
Right. Okay, right.
But still, it doesn't matter. It's overall, it's an animated show with one episode that features something other than animation.
It's total pedantry. It's total pedantry. And like, admittedly, there's a lot of people on the internet who that is chiefly how they function when talking about art. The only thing that matters is what category I can place this piece of art in, and I find that so dull. Like, it is such a limited way to view this stuff, and it feels like you're trying to turn it into math instead of talking about how the art made you feel, which is the interesting part of it. So
yeah. It's easier than talking about feelings, you know.
Well, certainly
proving it via math.
Also from Branko Burks, and I've talked to a German filmmaker friend who says Netflix originals like the German show Dark do not feel German, which he says is typical of international Netflix shows. Is Netflix trying to typify certain media like anime to make it more palatable to international audiences?
I think the first half of that is yes, but I thought I saw someone on that comment say that Dark actually aired on German TV before Netflix, so it's kind of a moot example, but I don't actually know for sure.
Yeah, someone with the handle Dark Netflix answered that.
Okay, they probably know.
It was a Dark... Well, yeah, they know, but it also it clearly like a Dark
fan account.
But I think their overall question was something that we talked about earlier, and it's how I feel about them trying to commodify what they think box of anime is, and then just stamp that on things.
Well, I do think that American Netflix productions, outside of a few films and stuff, have kind of a blandening effect. Like, they all kind of do look alike. There's a cinematography effect that I think was mostly inspired by David Fincher that applies to a tremendous number of Netflix shows, which results in kind of a blandening. I think it does kind of make it all feel like the same thing.
Yeah.
Sometimes. Not everything. I loved a lot of their original stuff last year, and they have a lot of great programming. I mean, they made 10 hours of The Dark Crystal, for God's sake. And it looked great. It didn't look like standard Netflix stuff. But there is kind of a Netflix look, just like there's a Marvel look, just like there's a DC look, just like there's like a Harry Potter look. You know, like there's a certain look to these things. But I haven't noticed that really with their original anime productions.
I think the common thing with some of their original anime productions is something that's been happening, you know, with any kind of co-productions since basically the 90s, which is just a focus on more slightly more Hollywood-y action sci-fi things, right?
Like set pieces over maybe really good writing.
I mean, a lot of it to me, especially nowadays, just feels like it's a lot of like producers, I would assume, based on some of my experience talking to people in this world, it's like producers who watched Cowboy Bebop and like Ninja Scroll and stuff in college or something.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's like that's kind of their reference point, and that's what makes anime cool. And then we get stuff that is trying to kind of ape that vibe.
Yeah, I think that's totally true. It's, you know, there's definitely like most things do kind of look, well, okay, I can tell what you watched. Like, I you know, I've watched enough anime to know what you saw before you made this general. But I don't think that's necessarily a blandening. I think it's just normal. Emperor Matt asks, if anime were to become a neutral term, what term should then be used to categorize primarily Japanese productions?
Japanese animation.
Yeah, I would just call it Japanese animation if anime becomes totally... If you say, like, I like anime, and they're like, oh, you mean like He-Man? I'll be like, well, no.
Fuck
like,
you.
Like Japanese animation.
It's pretty simple. I mean, it sums up most of it, you know?
Yeah, like,
there's edge cases, but that'll catch most cases when you say Japanese animation.
Land of Obscusion asks, how long until Japanimation re-enters the vernacular? He says, I'm not sure this is a serious question. I hope it doesn't. I don't like that word because people will tend to emphasize the first syllable and then it's racist. So, gross.
Problematique. Let's not bring it back.
Yeah. Almost done here. Carl Olsen asks, with the gradual internationalization of anime and manga, where artists from all over the world are working in or remotely for Japanese companies, if not co-founding them in the case of Science Saru, aren't the labels already blurring without Netflix's actions? Yes.
This is my point from before.
Right.
It's not about the actual ethnicity of the people making it.
Yeah.
Eun Young Choi, I'm sure I'm saying her name wrong, is a... I'm pretty sure she lives in Japan. She definitely works in Japan, right? I don't know her like citizenship status. Not that it really matters, but she's a Japanese animator. She is a person working in Japan on animation.
Yeah, it's the Felipe Smith example.
Like, right. Yeah, and there's tons of French animators working over there too. Background art, animation.
Thomas Romain, you know all those.
Yeah, Bahi JD is over there. Right. You know,
I mean, it's like I think there's this weird thing where people act like. Japan, like someone being Japanese or making Japanese animation, they have to be ethnically Japanese. I mean, there's like immigrants in America who make animation and things. We would still consider them to be American animators, right? I mean, that's like crazy.
If you're a good person, you do.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's see. GW Taco asks, presuming a flexible view of the anime term, is it possible to judge an anime look or an anime influence, or do we have to concede it's completely in the eye of the beholder? I don't think you can do that. I don't think
I think there are common
TV anime looks
that you will see in a lot of things, but there's not like a single anime style.
Yeah. Right. Like put something like Lou Over the Wall next to Sword Art Online and tell me that there's a united aesthetic here.
I mean, my favorite example is always Agretzko, which just looks completely different from
everything. Yeah, it looks totally different from anything.
Put Agretzko next to Inferno Cop.
Right.
What is anime?
Anime is...
Straight from Japan.
Totally unexpected.
It's so hard to get that.
It's not kid stuff.
And it's streaming 24 hours a day, right? All right, anyway. Zardoz asks, thoughts on Netflix and its ilk? All right, picking which projects get made promoted based on the algorithm. In what ways is good or bad versus how markets and producing have been previously? I'm not certain they do.
I don't know if we can answer that question without looking in Netflix's black box.
Yeah, which you won't be able to. So this is people making it. I'm pretty sure they don't have like a server room downstairs that just like spits out a piece of paper that says make this. Although there was a news story recently.
It's like Isaac Asimov story.
Yeah. Well, although recently Warner Brothers said they were trying to develop that.
Which, like AI cool. that creates scripts.
An algorithm that tells them what to make next. Uh-huh. You know?
Right.
Secret ingredient is love. Yeah. Who's been screwing with this thing?
I made a Markov chain that generated a script. Here it is.
Yeah,
it's just a full anime script.
And you're like, but this completely falls apart in the third act, and the computer spits out a piece of paper that says "fuck you."
like you said, though, guaranteed the way this almost certainly works is, you know, they have somebody run a bunch of analytics. They do some human analysis on those analytics. They talk to some, you know, marketing and development people, and they make a decision, a human decision based on the analytics that they're looking at. Right. So it's not like 100% automated.
Yeah, no, it's not. Yeah, it's not like the computer is going to just dump out a USB drive with a movie on it that you should release. I say that now. Smash cut to 20 years from now.
Right. Yep, seriously. Yep. Yeah.
Okay. Executive producer Hatsune Miku.
Yeah. Oh god. This is like our grim future. We are finished. That does it for me. Evan, thank you so much for coming on by. I really appreciated that discussion. It was great.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate being able to just air all of my thoughts on this.
Yeah, it's a big subject. And Lindsay, as always, thank you very much.
Oh yeah.
Okay, that's our show. Huge thanks to Evan and Lindsay for stopping on by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes or wherever you find your podcasts. Leave us comments, ratings, whatever you feel like. You know, it helps us. Thanks a lot, and we'll see you all next time.